You're listening to the Book Club at 91.7 on WVXU and WMUB. I'm Mark Purcell. Glad to have you along on this Saturday morning. She's a best-selling author of 8 memoirs and 4 novels. You may remember her book Generation X from 2012, where she finally realized Fruit Loops were not an appropriate dinner. Or maybe you followed her year of imitating the lifestyle of Martha Stewart in The Tao of Martha just a year or so ago. Jen Lancaster is the author of the new book, I Regret Nothing, as she looks at forming a bucket list and trying to, well, scratch some of those off. Jen Lancaster, welcome to the Book Club at 91.7.
Thank you for having me.
I know that was a long and lengthy introduction, but I wanted to ask about how you got started in documenting your constant quest for self-improvement, now all the way up to the bucket list. What kicked you off back in 2006 with that memoir, Bitter is the New Black?
Honest to God, I never planned for any of this. Back in 2001, I was a dot-com executive. I'd gotten out of college in the mid-90s, and it was a great economy back then. The internet was brand new. Everybody had terrific jobs. Everybody had great titles. Everyone had amazing salaries. The thing is, once the dot-com market began to crash, people who didn't really have a lot of skills lost their jobs. I was one of them. My husband, also one of them. So we went from thinking, it's always going to be like this. It's never going to be feast or famine. It's always going to be feast. This is great. We went from that to both of us losing our jobs, and it took him a year to get hired on, and it took me 2 years to find another job. So we lost everything that we had, and the process was so painful that I had to find a way to, you know, get my feelings out. So I began a blog just where I could complain, because my friends had, at that point, had sort of heard enough. So I started writing things down, and I began to find an audience. That wasn't my original intent, but that ended up happening. And honest to God, I was so desperate back then. People were saying, well, you should be a writer. And my first thought was, will they give me a check? I would like that. Yes. So I started to write down all of my thoughts. You know, I would watch a Tori Spelling movie, and I would describe what I had seen. Like, there was never a point when I wasn't writing. And the more I did it, the better at it I got. I got to the point where I thought, I might have enough material here for something. I read a book by this author, Lori Natero, who wrote The Idiot Girl's Action Guide, and it was so funny, and it was just stories about her getting drunk and falling down, and I thought, you can do this professionally? So I put together material, and I didn't know how to write a query letter to actually contact literary agents, but I did know the whole dot-com marketing field. So I came up with the brilliant idea of putting my writing out there so literary agents would query me, and I wouldn't have to write this scary letter. That ended up being what happened, and I had agents contacting me about writing a book. Now, becoming an author is the slowest get-rich scheme ever, because my first 3 years as an author, I didn't make anything, except for the $12 an hour I was making as a temp. When my first book came out in 2006, I had been working on it building up toward it for almost 4 years. So that's how it came about.
And you kept writing since then, and I have to say I come into this interview slightly miffed, because I got kicked out of bed because I was reading your book, just because I was laughing so much and my wife wanted to go to sleep. So she said, go, you're going to sleep on the couch tonight if you're going to keep on reading that book. But I have to say, and I Regret Nothing, you just have found a way to resonate with a nice approach to life. I really find your writing, Jen, to keep you smiling, because, you know, life's not always fun, and you keep on, you know, you have to keep on going no matter what. And you do a great job with that. Where did that sense of humor come from?
You know, I think my sense of humor comes from just being really observant, and I really pay attention. I think that's a trait you find with most writers. But when I come up with my books, it's always really organic. For example, I wrote this book called My Fair Lazy, and in it, it was a book where I decided I was going to culture up, because my friend and I had gone to this experimental theater dance performance, which I didn't understand at all. My only experience with dance was watching So You Think You Can Dance on Fox, and it was great, and I understood it. These women walking around on stage, smoking, wearing beekeeper's masks with rubber babies dropping out of their dress, didn't get it. I didn't understand it. And people, the audience, loved it. They went crazy for it. And when it was over, I turned to my friend Stacy and I said, you understand this is why the funding to the arts keeps getting cut. Because I felt like an idiot. And I thought, well, maybe if I try to get a little bit of culture and maybe stop watching The Real Housewives so much, I will be enriched. I mean, that's a very organic book. It wasn't, oh, what can I do to write a book? Everything I've come up with is organic, like with The Tao of Martha, the book that I wrote about spending a year living by Martha Stewart's dictates. That wasn't just because I wanted to be clever. It was because I knew that we were going to lose our dog that year, this pit bull, Maisie, who was the love of my life. And she had had cancer for 3.5 years with the diagnosis that she'd make it for 6 months total. So I wanted to find a way to stockpile happiness. And I thought, who would be better at that than Martha Stewart? I mean, Oprah is all about thoughts and feelings, but Martha is about tangible action. You're sad? Here, have a delicious macaroni and cheese. So that's why that came about. So each time you see a book by me, it really is in response to something that I'm going through.
Speaking with Jen Lancaster, her newest memoir is I Regret Nothing. You can learn more about it at our website, WVXU.org. And this is all about tattoos and spring break and bucket list, and it really covers a wide range of different subjects. And you point out that you are, how did you describe it, on the wrong side of 40. I want to quote you here. I'm on the wrong side of 40. I own a home. I buy season tickets for the opera, and one of my dearest friends has her AARP card. My days of going on spring break are over. Don't worry, I'm not doing anything stupid in Savannah, is what you say, and I regret nothing. But it's amazing, no matter how old we get, that we are still young and dumb, no matter what we try to
Those
do.
Those were famous last words.
Yes,
my husband kept saying, you're going on adult spring break, and it turns out that he was right. Apparently, Savannah has very lax public drinking laws, and you know, again, I'm in my late 40s. Public drinking is just hasn't been something that I've looked to do in about 2 decades. So when we were on this horrible ghost tour, my friend Julia brought these bottles of wine, and she brought us these sippy cups with straws. And she kept saying to respect the straw, but I'm 47. I don't drink wine out of straws. I don't know how this works. And it ended up going horribly awry. So my best friend from college for 30 years, she and I found ourselves in a firehouse begging to use their bathroom. And there were two stalls, and my friend Joanna, who is the best person on earth, she's the mother of a special needs child, she's the person who, whatever bride is getting married, she's the person who's always put next to the minister because they know she'll be lovely and wonderful and appropriate. She said the greatest line I have ever heard, which is, you go ahead and take the stall. I'm just going to use the urinal. That was the moment where I thought, I need to have a bucket list so I can specifically cross off this experience.
Well, quite a bucket list you make up. Lose 20 pounds, run a 5K, learn self-defense, learn to ride a bike. And this is what got me kicked out of bed, reading about the bike and learning to ride the adult tricycle. Your husband Fletch is good at trying to keep you on the straight and narrow there, but you talk about riding a bike, and you hadn't been on a bike in years. You know, what was that bike thing? And you said something about Fletch had prohibited you from buying a tricycle because of some childhood trauma.
Yeah, when he was a little kid, he had parents who weren't terribly nice, and his dad rarely spoke up for him. But when my husband outgrew his tricycle, his mother said, oh, we'll just get you a bigger tricycle. And his dad really had to fight for Fletch to be on a regular bike. And then when he was in college, he had this job as a security guard where he had to ride around on this big, stupid three-wheeled bike. So he had some trauma. I mean, I thought that they were dumb traumas. But he had some trauma. So we have very few rules in our marriage. His rule for me is not to buy a three-wheeled bike. My rule for him is to never hide a pretend severed head in the toilet, because that is a very specific fear that I have. So I violated what would have been our wedding vows if the minister in the casino had been willing to work off script.
Well, you go through it and you learn you actually can. Well, I you set me up, Jen, because you write that you wanted that stability of the adult tricycle, if you may, and you didn't think you could stay up on two wheels, but you did make it.
But you
never forget riding a bike. You go, well, that's not true. You can.
Yeah, well, you absolutely do. The thing is, I was afraid on the three-wheeled bike. It wasn't until our dogs got out that I got on this thing and flew like the wind, because I wasn't so self-conscious and I wasn't worried about falling over and hurting myself. And you do, it eventually comes back, but it doesn't come back immediately. It takes your body some readjusting, because the difference between riding a bike when you are, 48 pounds and being a full-fledged adult who is worried that people are going to get Queen songs in their head when they see you on it, that's a big difference. Your center of gravity has definitely shifted.
Exactly. That's a nice way to put it, too. Well, what has been, through all these memoirs, the feedback, what have you had the most fun with? This is your eighth memoir, through all these adventures and misadventures that you've had and talking to readers, what have you gotten the most out of?
I think I've gotten the most out of honestly interacting with my readers, that they tell me this book helped me get through something serious. I mean, I've had moms contact me that their child was in the pediatric ICU and that I was able to give them a laugh. People tell me that I helped them get through the death of the parent. And it's just, I mean, really, it's just me stories about my pants falling down. It's not War and Peace, but the fact that I'm able to be there for people and they can look at me as a friend and it helps them, I think that is really gratifying.
And your husband Fletch doesn't actually read your books because he says he doesn't have to because he lives them. But what's that like, having, the one who should be your biggest fan, Jen, right there in the house, but not reading your books?
Well, here's the thing. A lot of, I don't necessarily like him to read my stuff, and I read a lot of it out loud to him to make sure that it sounds conversational, but I'll read something to him and he'll say, "You didn't say that. I said it." And I think, I know, but it's funnier if that great line comes from me. So I do steal a lot of his words, but we both own the company. So, it benefits us both. It was funny, a few years ago I was on tour. I think it was for My Fair Lady, and that was a particularly long tour. I was gone for quite a while. And I think he missed me so much that he began to read My Fair Lazy. And then Sebastian Younger's book came out, and he started to read that. And he called me. He's like, "Oh, his stuff is so much better than yours."
Oh, that's a good boost of confidence for a writer, isn't it, Jen?
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate your time today and all the good laughs, even if they did get me kicked out of bed. I greatly appreciate it. And thanks for being on the Book Club at 91.7.
Thank you.
Jen Lancaster, her newest memoir is I Regret Nothing. You can find it where books are sold and learn more about it and Jen and her work at our website, wvxu.org. This is the Book Club at 91.7.
Right now, on the Book Club at 91.7, we're asking you, what book have you read over and over?
Hi, my name is Chris. I'm from Northside. I think I've read The Baron in the Trees by Italo Calvino more than any other book. I can't say why, it's just something about the feel, the atmosphere that he creates. It's kind of a fairy tale, but it's also definitely for grown-ups too. But I find it's kind of comfort food for me. I can go back and read it again and again, and each time I find something new, I find I enjoy it more each time I go through it.
My name is Elizabeth Truitt, and I live in Marymount. I have to say, it's got to be the Harry Potter series. Actually, it's one of those that is an easy escape for me. I can pick it up in any order, and it doesn't matter. And Rowling has just obviously such an incredible narrative that kind of makes you escape, and you can leave whatever you're doing and jump into that and then jump right back into what I'm doing.
My name is Christopher Scott, and I'm the author of The Secret Wisdom of the Earth, Lonesome Dove. Lonesome Dove by Larry McMurtry is the only book that I finished and then immediately reread. I've read it probably four or five times. To Kill a Mockingbird is another one that I've read probably 15 times. And Blood Meridian by Cormac McCarthy is another one. That's a book that I think you have to read several times to really get the feel of the language and just appreciate, you know, the genius of Cormac McCarthy.
Hello, I'm Kate Lawrence from Mount Washington. I'm a big rereader. I like to read things over and over again. I always pick up the Sherlock Holmes stories. They're some of my favorites. I started reading them when I was probably 10 years old, and I still pick them up today. I never get tired of them. There's so many of them, you can always pick a different one, so you're not always reading the same story over and over again, but those are some of my favorites.
Hello, I'm Michael Link from Northside. One of the books that I've read over and over and over again is by David Benioff, who is currently well known for scripting the Game of Thrones TV series with his partner, but it's called City of Thieves. And this book, it was one of the ones that I probably wasn't going to read, and just on a lark, I picked it up, and I couldn't put it down. It's historical fiction for people who don't think they like historical fiction. It's very fast-paced. You can tell he's a screenwriter by training. It's very cinematic. It's funny, but engages you right at the beginning and pulls you through the siege of Stalingrad, and it's fantastic.
Hi, I'm Gara from Mount Washington. I have read Hero and the Crown by Robin McKinley over so many times. I'm on my second copy of the paperback. So in about college, I had to replace it. I'm still on that copy, but just full of adventure, again, strong characters, very strong female leads, and just a really comforting read.
Keep in touch with the Book Club at 91.7 on the web, through Facebook, email, and the WVXU.org website.